Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Gorgeous Entertainment. I am here in a practice space, which is a church hall in Islington, prior to the Gruffalo's Child going to the West End. I am here with Olivia Jacobs, who's the director, who was also the director of the Gruffalo.
That's right.
So, and you're here with the offspring. The Gruffalo's Child will be at the Lyric Theater on Shaftesbury Avenue. Previews start November 22nd, and it runs through January 7th. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous, Olivia.
Thanks for having me.
So, tell us a little bit about you.
Oh, throw me in at the deep end.
Yes. Okay. Tell me about your start in theater.
I guess it was a very young one. My parents took me to see theatre and I was hooked from a very young age, I think on great stories told really well. And I've always loved storytelling, whether it be a bedtime story or a story coming alive on stage. Went to university, went to drama school, originally thinking about acting, but then finding myself very frustrated and thinking, oh, I would do it differently, and thinking, okay, maybe I should go the other side, move over to the dark side. So I moved into directing and worked for a number of companies administratively, figuring out how to run my own company, and then as a venue manager for a while, and then set up Tall Stories with a friend, Toby Mitchell, and we've been running it for the last 20 years. This is our 20th year.
And you originally directed the Gruffalo in like a basement fringe production.
Yeah.
Tell me about that original production.
Well, we found the story, and Toby was actually working for Macmillan, who are the publishers, at the time. And he said to me, oh, it's such a beautiful story just coming out. It's lovely. We could make it into a play. And I thought, what a great idea. It's such a lovely story. And at the time, it hadn't won all the awards and it didn't have all the notoriety. And I remember we were in rehearsals. We were going to do a small tour in the back of a car, three actors, a storytelling show. And during rehearsals, I think it won the Smarties Award. And I remember saying to one of the actors, it's brilliant, it's won an award, so, you know, people might know it, which would be good. And here we are, all these years later, people definitely know it. It must be one of the biggest, the Gruffalo is iconic, I think, now. Has been compared to figures in politics, figures in every aspect of life, I imagine. It was a very small touring production that we toured in the back of a car and has now become a much bigger beast.
Yes. Like the Gruffalo itself. What is it about Julia Donaldson's story? Because her as a storyteller, all of her stories really do, they speak deeper. Why? What is it about them? And why, what then speaks to you as, oh yes, yeah, so then I want to see it in 3D. What, I want it live. Tell me a bit about that process and the differences.
I think with Julia's stories, in particular the Gruffalo's Child, Room on the Broom as well, they have a really beautiful simplicity to them. And alongside Axel's illustrations, I mean, they're so beautiful. And they do feel like very classic, very timeless stories. And there's something very appealing about that. And those the best stories of all time, you know, the Snow Whites and Rumpelstiltskins and those classic fairy stories have that same timeless feel to them. And I think Julia captures that beautifully, and the rhyming couplets, you know, only go to help that. They make them it makes it all the more memorable.
And there's a little bit of fear, there's a little bit of suspense.
Yes, yeah, certainly in the stories of hers that we have chosen, there is a little bit of fear, but not too much. I think everybody likes to be told a good story, and everybody likes to be a little bit afraid, but not too afraid. So there's always a balance. But I think she manages to capture a really beautiful, timeless story, succinctly, and Axel's illustrations can only enhance that.
And, okay, so then why, I mean, the books are perfect, so why do we need to see them live? And I imagine that nearly everybody who attends the theater has read the book, if not once, 400 times. Mm-hmm. What are we expecting to get that's different, or do we just want to be a part of it?
Well, I think seeing a story that you love told in a different medium is always going to be exciting, interesting. How do they do it? How are they going to make the witch fly in Room on the Broom? How is Gruffalo's child going to look? What are the characters going to be like? And you can read the book in 3 minutes, maybe, and our shows are around 55 minutes long. So the interest is in what's the expansion, what happens in between. And for us, that all happened very logically. You look at the character of the fox and the snake and the owl, and you think, okay, well, how do they move? What do they sound like? What do they do? How do they interact with the Gruffalo's child? Or in the first story with the mouse, you know, what happens in each of those scenes? What music might there be? And why does a character sing a song? Why will it come out? What type of music would they sing? And it all sort of felt for us that it happened very organically. So with something like Gruffalo, we looked at a fox and we looked at how foxes move, and they have that sort of very gentle pad, which gives them a sort of lilt. And when you put that onto a person, it gives you a sort of bounce, which sort of transferred quite nicely into a little bit of a Wheeler Dealer, a little bit of a geezer, who suddenly, obviously, he would sing Scar, which seemed like the logical thing for him to sing. And all of the characters sort of were developed in that way. So the stage adaptation gives you a little something that you won't get from reading the book, and an extension of maybe what your parents do if they change voices, or an extension of that, and a real visual treat as well.
And it's a treat for everybody. I mean, because, you know, reading stories, especially the same story night after night, can become, I don't know, seem like a chore or possibly burdensome, which is then you're all there together, mm-hmm. you know, intergenerationally, and everyone is being entertained. So it sort of freshens it up for everybody as well.
I think we forget as grown-ups how much we like to be told a good story well. And sometimes it's such a pleasure to be transported into another world. Quite often I find that parents come to our shows thinking, oh, this is for my child, and leave thinking, oh, I really had a nice time, I really enjoyed myself. And that would be our aim, is to make sure, you know, 60% of our audience are grown-ups. So we have to make sure that 60% of our... Who wouldn't cater for 60% of their audience?
And they're the paying end.
They're also the paying end, yes, quite usually. Yeah, they are the paying end. And, you know, we all come from stories and we all end up as stories. And our love of stories is probably the only thing that unites everybody. So for me, making sure that our stories speak across all generations is massively, massively important. It should be a communal experience. There's too much screens and individual focus and not enough of actually sharing what you're doing.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about that, because as you were speaking and saying, you know, everyone loves story, and I, obviously working in radio, love stories and mm-hmm. spoken word, and, you know, things like Moth and This American Life and Shortcuts, which is on here, which is amazing, and it's people's stories. How do we? Okay, but that's me, and I'm already, you know, I'm interested party. I'm vested, mm-hmm. vested listener. With all the screens and especially visual stuff being so strong these days, how do we bring story into our lives a little bit more?
Stories everywhere. It is your lives. It's in every element of your lives. You come home and your parents say, what did you do at school today? And you tell them the story of what you did. So it is always part of your life. We just don't necessarily class it as that. But as for making sure that, just reading books, stories, you know, but trying to get all of that into our young audiences' minds, we have to go and take it to them and interest them. So, for example, one of the things that we do in Tall Stories is we have a touring show that will go into schools and is free to schools, and we take that in, and it's a sort of, I want to say immersive, but it makes people feel uncomfortable. But it's not. It's a show that the audience become part of without feeling forced that they have to join in.
Not pointed out.
Yes, exactly. Out. Exactly. It's a very voluntary joining in. And that's it's a story that helps the young people in our audience to think about what stories they might want to tell, what their story might be. And those are things that we can do, we can take into schools. It doesn't cost us very much to do, but it can be a really transformative experience. And we found that the children who are coming to see those shows when they're reporting back to their teachers are just saying, can we have more? Can we do more of these sorts of things? So obviously there are financial constraints on everyone. We can't take it everywhere and we have to do limited tours. But we just have to get the word out there and offer as much as we can to our young audiences so that they grow up with stories and find ways to tell their own stories in new and interesting ways.
Yes, because story isn't for other people. It's for
everyone.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and always has been, from knitting circles way back when, you know, to Grimm Brothers, you know, to the most modern stories today, you know. But a good story, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong, she says, hopefully.
And a little bit about the story of Tall Stories, because usually, you know, when something starts in the basement in this off Broadway sort of way, and it, you know, has some success and notoriety, they get, you know, the Andrew Lloyd Webbers in, and, you know, to zazz it up. So how did you keep on to the gig? And how did you grow the show from, you know, obviously it's not from your back of your car any longer.
Well, no, not any longer. It wouldn't fit. It definitely wouldn't fit now. But I think the company has grown very organically. We just tried to find out what works for our audiences. We keep listening to our audience. And one thing that you try heralds another thing, which heralds another thing and another thing. So most of our international work started by attending a festival in Scotland, which was attended by a festival promoter from Canada, which was attended by, and it sort of rolls from there. And I guess you have to try and take good financial decisions. You have to try and take risks. But as long as, which I hope we do, we continue to put the audience at the forefront of what we do, then hopefully success will follow. But in terms of Gruffalo itself, it did really start literally in the back of a car. And we continue to redevelop both Gruffalo and Gruffalo's Child. So Gruffalo's Child has seen a whole new redevelopment just a year and a half ago. So we looked at the beginning of the show and the opening of the show, and we reassessed the costumes. And as time goes on, we have to keep changing it and making sure that it is still being told in the way that we feel is best for our current audience. So we just keep reinventing and keep updating and keep making sure that the show is the best it can be.
I love that aspect of keeping questioning and keeping growing and not being stagnant, because if it's stagnant, the audience suffers.
And I think, you know, when we started doing this, you know, 20 years ago, if we went up to the Edinburgh Fringe with a family show, there was maybe, six or seven other family shows, and now there's 40. I hope that we've been partly responsible for that. I hope that the cross-generational work that we've been touring has heralded more work for that audience, which means they have a greater choice, which means that the work has to be good quality, because otherwise they're not going to come. So I hope we've been part of that. But yes, that does mean we need to look for a new blue ocean. What's next? What's the next exciting project? And, you know, where do we go from here?
Okay, so what's next?
Good question. We continually ask ourselves that. Yeah. So currently we have shows touring or touring internationally. We have productions that are in South Africa. So the Gruffalo's in South Africa touring in English, but also in Corsa, and in Israel touring in Hebrew, but also in Arabic. Which we were really keen to make sure that happened. New shows, we have just developed a new show with Nika Burns, which will be opening at the Vaudeville Theatre on the 15th of December. And that's a production called Wild Creatures. And it's part of Dominic Drumgoole's season of Oscar Wilde work at the Vaudeville. And it's Oscar Wilde's fairy stories, little known these days, but beautiful, beautiful fairy stories, which we've adapted into one long story, or one 50-minute story, with other stories inside it. So that's always quite a change for us. It's quite a dark stories, quite dark stories, but also very beautiful and very funny. We're hoping people will come along and try those out, those people who've seen the Gruffalo. It's for a slightly older age range. So hopefully those people who've seen the Gruffalo will come along and
Gruffalo graduates.
Yeah, they'll graduate. Yes, absolutely. And there'll be a grown-up show on its way next year.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Olivia. And again, the Gruffalo's Child will be at the Lyric Theatre on Shaftesbury Avenue. Previews start November 22nd, and it runs through January 7th. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me.